the masterminds of India,
Jesus Christ,
and all liberated saints, we pray unto you all that India be a real spiritual republic, and America be a great spiritual republic, and may the spiritual democracy of India and materially efficient democracy of America fused together with all truly democratic nations of the world to fuse into the spiritual United States of the world, guided by God through the conscience of the ideal citizen of the globe. Today's subject from the Bible: therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also God was his father, making himself equal with God. There are two things we have to understand in this sentence, in this text of the Bible. The Jews as a mass were not responsible, for there were learned Jews and there were ignorant Jews, learned Brahmins and ignorant Brahmins, learned priests and ignorant priests. We find ignorant, fanatical people in all times in history. They have created great disorder and trouble, and under the name of religion, they have perpetrated worse crimes. Out of the Bible, which teaches that if anybody hits you on the left cheek, turn the right cheek, the Spanish Inquisition and all kinds of wars of crusade and destruction of people have been perpetrated. Now, Christian Bible is not responsible for that. So these people, ignorant people, they thought, why was Jesus claiming to be one with God? Because they didn't know any better. In the ocean, there are many waves. Each wave is a bulge of the ocean. It is not good to say that the wave has become the ocean, but it is correct to say that the ocean has become the wave. For the ocean can remain without the wave, but the wave cannot remain without the ocean. What Jesus meant, Jesus did not say, I am God. Jesus knew that God has become himself. As all liberated masters feel, the little waves of human beings who are egotistical, after learning a little bit of religion, they say, we are God, or I am God. They are mistaken to say that. As no wave should be spoken of as the ocean, no human being should claim to be God. But as it is correct to say that the ocean has become the wave, so it is correct to say God is in me, or God has become myself. That's the correct and wonderful thing to say, because you destroy all egotism thereby, giving God the supreme chance of manifestation. There is nothing else but God. But as soon as you think that you are God, you have separated yourself from God. And that is egotistical and spiritually disastrous for you, because you will be separated from God. And it will produce the egotism that you are God when you are not God. Somebody pours a few bricks on your head, perhaps one little piece of brick in the right place, and your God will escape from the body. Now this, the great God who is, with all the worlds and the universe is being crushed and coming and going in him, but he doesn't change. Waves change, but the ocean doesn't. Creation changes, but God doesn't. That's why Jesus very clearly said, that's why I love him so much. He was one of the greatest. He said, what my Father knows, even I know not. Therein he gives the whole thing to God. And also, in the Jewish interpretation of God, as there is no other God but the God of God. That's very beautiful. But anybody who is liberated has a right to say, I and my Father are one. That was said in love. That I have no other existence but that the Father and I are one. It wasn't said, I am God. Just like the saint, he was a fairly good saint, I heard about him, but he got spoiled by getting the adoration of a few disciples. The little cup can't take the whole ocean. A cup as big as the ocean can take the whole ocean within itself. So, when I approached this man, I prostrated myself before him. And I prostrated very sincerely. I didn't touch his feet, which I never did except to Master. And as soon as he saw me very meek and humble, he said, right away, to impress me more, he said, I am God. He was very much astonished at what followed. I said, you don't say so, is it? Oh, he was so angry with me. I used to carry a little mirror, and I said, look at the God. There he is. All the face broken up with sourness. And I turned and walked out, and he ran after me. He got hold of me. He said, I'm very sorry. That proved he was a saint. You have awakened me. I am very sorry what I did. I said, a few disciples have spoiled you. Why didn't you follow what you asked? I realized you were a great soul. But why did you have to tell me that you are God? That's why God does not speak from the clouds to anyone, except to individual souls who are liberated. That's why throughout history, God has seldom talked to masses, never to the whole world. Because he doesn't know how great he is. If he knew, he wouldn't be great. So these people didn't know the spirit of Jesus. The Sabbath day is meant principally to put your mind on God. You don't do that. It's extremely necessary. We are reviving the custom. And one day, at least a few hours, you should wholly think of nothing but God or practice your meditations, by which you feel that divine bliss and your whole week will be charged with the divine consciousness. And because you don't observe that Sabbath, you do not give one day even for your whole mind to God, your week is full of worries, and your months are full of worry, and years of life spent in worry, and the harvest of sin means error, mistaken existence is death, means a sorrowful change, a sorrowful transition from this life to the other. There is no death possible to the soul. But why go out of this body in disaster, in sorrow? But if you observe the real Sabbath of thinking of God and doing all activities for God, or doing all activities with the thought of God, that is the real Sabbath. Suppose you pull up your bullock from the ditch with the thought of God on the Sabbath day. It's all right. It is observance of Sabbath. If you keep on doing material things and think of God all the time, still it's Sabbath. But if you do material things without the thought of God and thinking that you are observing the Sabbath day, it is not Sabbath. But if you meditate upon God as much as you can on the Sabbath day, that's the real Sabbath. But that does not mean that while you are thinking of God and somebody is dying in front of you and you say, it's too bad, it's Sabbath day, you've got to die. Well, God will say, what's the matter with you? I am dying in that body and you don't help me. God is the one that's playing this drama. And if you don't exercise the spirit of mercy and sympathy and love that he has given you, you are not good at all in the eyes of God. The best way to observe the Sabbath is, well, you observe Sabbath, you are thinking of God today, and we meditate some, and then you come in the evening meditations, because one day you should keep your mind on one subject. Lord, then it is real self. The thing is this, you must give one day to God. Because I know some have irate husbands and irate wives, and some husbands come here and some wives come here, they have those difficulties, I understand. But even then, so surcharge yourself in the morning with the thought of God that your whole day will be a Sabbath day. There's always a way. Whenever you want to do a thing, you can do it, in spite of obstructions. When you think of God, in spite of all troubles, then God knows, God will know that you want Him very badly. But these people didn't understand the meaning of Sabbath, did not understand that Jesus was one with God, and that He did not egotistically plan Himself in the throne of omnipresence, but that He knew He was one with God. When you know that, it's all right to say in any way you want to. But without that knowledge, if you say, I am God, it's very simple. And usually those that are one with God, they do not say so. But when they are one with His love, they can say, I and my Father are one. But I don't think Jesus said ever that I am God. That's why He clearly said, even what my Father knows, I know not. So many little minds say, I am God. There are two things which in America I find so many claiming to be God and live forever. One teacher who had a great following, he told me that he was going to live forever. I said, that's a very good thing to think, because you may live long. But when you die, there'll be nobody to question you or argue with you about it, that you lied. He got very mad. And later on he died. And anybody that says, I'll live forever, meaning the body, watch if his hair is falling or teeth, you know then he's lying. If he can keep his hair forever, how could he keep his body forever? The great masters would never say that publicly. Babaji, he said, you live forever, he is living. But he said only to a few, he wouldn't just publicly declare to all blind students to keep them going that you live forever. God never permits, that's why, because He is impersonal in His infiniteness. That's why He doesn't permit any human being to live forever. The great masters can produce a body any time. What's the difference? Any time Lāri Māsha can produce a body of Christ. Christ and Lāri Māsha met, Christ and Babaji met, Christ met St. Francis every night in the woods of Assisi. But He isn't allowed to come publicly in the same form. Because God's creation will be exploded right away then. He wants people to seek Him with great earnestness, and the divine romance between man and God will disappear if He publicly declares Himself. He has made Himself very plain in the flowers and the sky and the sun, moon, stars, and the capillary system of the human body, and the metabolic system and the electrical system in the body. He has clearly proved that we are not responsible for all the workings of the mechanisms. They are being taken care of by the Infinite. That's why sometimes when a doctor says, I will keep my patient alive, well, God laughs. Because if He has made up His mind to take, He will take him. And no doctor can help them. But if He keeps a person and all the doctors say he would go, he won't. But somebody was telling me one day in Encinitas, I admit that by carrot juice he had lived long and escaped death. He was very thin and emaciated, but he is very well and very sprightly. But he went a little too far and he said, I'll tell you how to fool St. Peter. I said, by carrot juice? He said, yes. He said, I fooled him 3 times. I said, if St. Peter makes up his mind to take you all the carrot juice, he couldn't help you. Don't tell me about fooling St. Peter with carrot juice. So he walked away. Didn't have anything to say. We had a nice time on the 26th about the declaring of the Republic of India. So I was glad I was able to go there. I have been in seclusion because I have been going 14 to 17 hours a day, and God asked me to be with Him only. That's why I was away. But I was happy to go there. Many things I wanted to say, but I couldn't. I was so touched with the joy of the occasion, but I know that the Spirit spoke through me whatever I wanted to say. And one of the things that I wanted to impress, that though I am happy about the Republic of India, the greatest dark cloud that has appeared is the division of Hindustan and Pakistan. I can picture what would have happened in America if it was divided between North and South, thanks to the instrumentality of that great, great soul, Abraham Lincoln. We need somebody like that. Too bad, Mahatma Gandhi was killed. He tried his utmost, but it's the most excruciating pain I have, this division between Hindustan and Pakistan. Well, that's his drama. God has to have always a villain on the screen. That's the worst part. But the thing is, we pray that India does not in any way imitate the faults of the Western Republic, but only their good points, and that India never forsake her religion, her true religion, a true religion which is based on the eternal principles of all religions. The definition of religion is dharma. Dharma means adhapatana dukha dharayati jasa dharma, which protects you from all suffering, physical, mental and spiritual, for all times. And that is my prayer today. Though I know you do not know what it is to be fettered, but now that India has become free, I feel that fetter, that political fetter, off from the body and the mind. But it will take a long, long time. You see, just as in the war that occurred between North and the South, the effects of that war have still left the South. There should be more cooperation between the North and the South. It is something I think most realize what a tremendous thing Abraham Lincoln did by bringing together North and the South. And that is my prayer today, that some Abraham Lincoln come in India who will bring the Muslims and the Hindu brothers together. Because we have lived under the same skies. The thing is, India needs that brotherhood now. But I am sure the Spirit of India, which is all embracing, will ultimately overcome the situation between the Muslims and the Hindus. A thought from the whispers from eternity. Holding to the log of laughter, I will float to the shores of bliss. I will sing to the voices of all. I will preach through all temples and prayers. I will love with the love of God. I will think with the thoughts of all. The hearts of all will be my heart. The souls of all will be my soul. And the smiles of all, my smile. That is the subject today. I like technical subjects. But this is something I think it's wonderful. Many psychologists teach you how to smile, and they say, well, if you can't smile, stand in front of a mirror and pull your muscles like that until you can smile. Well, that's a good idea. And some will smile, ha 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 ha, I put top of your head, get out of my way, you don't know what I'm feeling inside, you know. That kind of smile. I don't mean that you should smile that way. I don't mean the smile of contempt, smile of sarcasm, or any kind of smile that's born of greed or lust or any unwholesome psychological trait But that kind of smile which indicates in your facial muscles a pure sincerity, joy of your being, nobleness, mercy, sympathy, kindness, all the holy traits, psychological traits that make you happy and make others happy. Nobody wants to go near a skunk, why? Because immediately they turn their noses away, it is something repulsive. Nobody likes to be with somebody without a smile. Thousands of divorces have occurred in this country because the wife or the husband didn't smile. When you smile, and the smile comes from your heart, then that prince of smile is canopied beneath your celestial brow, and your soul smiles to your heart, and your heart smiles to your eyes. Then you are a smile millionaire. Scatter other smiles wherever you go, enriching other souls and enriching yourself. It is necessary. Smiles are so much necessary in the world. That's why I read a little bit comics. I know it's a waste of time. Still, it keeps you smiling. I think the Dagwood is the best. The name is wonderful. You see, I'm making you smile. In my school, I had to keep everybody in laughter, but when I was serious, and seriously thinking of divine subjects, I did not smile. But in boarding houses, there is always somebody who relaxes everyone from their serious duties and goes on smiling and being a clown. That's very objectionable. Because that brings you down from your higher purpose. It's easy to be frivolous in your young boyhood or girlhood. You should be more sober and sincere. And smile dignified and joyously and innocently and happily, that's very fine. But not those that are young, you should not have boisterous laughter. If you do, you will find your heart empty of the real joy. And you will be most likely laughing hyena. I remember somebody in we were staying for a little while near Salt Lake, and we were swimming, but there was a boy. If you heard his laughter, you would pass out right then. Many were muttering under their breath, calling him Jack Dash. You see? I never liked that word, but I liked that word first time applied to him. He was smiling, he was laughing. I never realized how a human being could laugh that way. And he kept it up for days. At last I quit going to swim with him. Everything is all right if it is properly expressed. Insincere smiles do not befit a sincere man. If you feel that you have to smile insincerely, do not smile. But when you smile, remember, when you are smiling about something, about somebody doing something, remember you are approving it. Another thing I never forgot, once I was in Colorado Springs and I saw the word Mormon written on stones, and I asked this man in the car, what's that? Oh, there are people who live in Salt Lake and they have horns on their forehead. And he said so emphatically, and so he was reveling in my ignorance, I almost believed that they have horns. So when I the train stopped near Salt Lake, I began to watch. I saw nobody on the platform had horns, and I thought somebody in the town must have horns. But I felt a wonderful vibration. And that's why I especially made it my point to go to Salt Lake City, and wonderful students came from there. Mr. Wright, who went to India with me and who written something about Master, he was also from Salt Lake. And Miss Fairite, she joined the work. It's 18 years now she's in the work. So you see, I was so happily surprised that Mormons had no horns. They were very, very good people and very devout people. The real smiles, what I mean, is this. The smile of bliss, when you meditate, when you feel that joy of God's presence, And if you keep that joyous smile on your face, and that is the smile that is in Lahari Maharaj's face, the smile of divine bliss, seeing the world and yet not seeing it, but seeing him fully, he's smiling at the joy, "I have in my breast something that you should have." That is the kind of smile to have all the time. And that smile does not break forth in horse laughter, or has no other meaning but like a fragrance of smile oozing out from the core of your blossomed soul, calling forth others to bathe in that divine fragrance of bliss. Even as a rose calls, "Come and bathe in my fragrance," so a divine man with a divine smile is greater than a rose, consciously calling others to bathe in that fragrant smile. Man goes through four states. When his desire is fulfilled, he is happy. When his desires are denied, he is unhappy. When he is neither happy nor sorrowful, he is full of boredom. And somebody says, "What's the matter with you?" Somebody is sitting this way. "Are you happy? Don't bother me. Are you unhappy? Don't bother me. I am bored." Then if you are peaceful, when you are neither, you are on the tide, on the wave of pleasure, or in the dump between pleasure and pain, bored, or on another wave of sorrow, when all these three emotions, three states of the mind, pleasure, pain and boredom, are shaved off, then you have peace. Peace is the absence of sorrow and excitement of pleasure or boredom. When that peace comes, then you can smile peacefully. Now some people have a little money, good health, no troubles, retire in a place, there is no excitement of pleasure or pain or boredom, they become too peaceful. So they begin to think, "Well, please knock us on the head to make us feel we are alive." Very few people have peace in the world. But as soon as some people have protracted peace, they lose it. They begin to lose. They want to get rid of it. Peace is a very desirable state. After a tumultuous existence, riding on the crest of pain and pleasure, and often dipped into the state of boredom, you find when you are floating in the calm sea of peace, it's wonderful. But greater than that state, after peace, is the bliss of the soul. It's ever new joy, joy that never goes and leaves your soul unto eternity. That can be attained only by perceiving God. No other way you can get that bliss. Whenever you are so-called happy, remember you are going to be unhappy. And when you are unhappy, you can't retain that state, you have to be happy. And if you are neither happy or unhappy, you have to be bored. Now I watch the faces of people. I see all these different kinds of emotions riding in their face. Either they are happy, "What happened? Oh, I got some money. I met some friend." Always a desire is fulfilled, and that when a desire is fulfilled, the face is smiling. When a desire is denied, that face is full of sorrow. And when neither I see the emotion of sorrow or pleasure reflected in the face, there is boredom. A few wear peace as their real fragrance in the face. When you have a pot under the moon and you are agitating the water in that pot, you have a distorted reflection of the moon. When you still the waves in the pot, you have a clear reflection of the moon. Now as soon as the water in the pot is calm, that's the state of peace. When all your sensations and thoughts disappear from your mind in meditation, you have a little peace. That's the negative state of peace. born out of the absence of the waves of pleasure, pain and indifference. But after a little while, just as when you look at the pot when it is still, you are glad to get rid of the waves. If you remain still, you will be attracted by the moon. So be still and know that you are God. When you are still, when you have really stilled your thoughts, as you, if you can consciously still your thoughts and sensations as you passively do in sleep, that I can do in a second, you will first experience the state of peace and you will smile. Your muscles will wear, muscles of the face will wear the peace of your heart. But if you ponder, if you look through peace, you will be able to see the purity of your soul undistorted by sensations and thought and reflexes of thought and reflexes of associated thoughts. That bliss is called ever new. Saints always have the ever new joy in their hearts. That's why they are unshakable by anger or fear, or when dissecting on the tables of the mind, dissecting truth or thoughts with the scalpel of reason or intuition, they remain unmoved.